Okay, so we'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, April 28th, 2014, and it is 6:18 in the evening. Would you please take a moment to review the minutes from April 14th meeting? Okay, hearing none then, we have Karen Carlson here this evening. Karen will be presenting the next three items, and we're going to start with the Hadley Math adoption. Karen?
You will actually see a brief presentation at the next regular scheduled board meeting by the Hadley staff members to really highlight it and things like that. There's some background information in the discussion section in that, but Hadley, the current textbook that they have chosen really not to use because they haven't done it itself, was, it dates 2007, but the company had done like a quick read update at one point, and they have just given them the newer version. So they, I kind of went back into our old curriculum review cycle, and back at 9-10, they were really starting to look for better resources. And then the Glenbard Consortium started doing work, so we delayed it, and then when Common Core was coming, we delayed even more. So they, actually last year, with implementing the Common Core, started to explore big ideas. They had given us some sample materials. Teachers started using it. They had given us some logins for them. And then we also had the desire to look at the Connected Mathematics Project 3, which is a revised version. Our elementary accelerated kids actually use CMP. They're using the revised version, which we thought, gosh, that'd be great if Hadley kind of liked the same material in that. So they've been using it 6th grade all year. 7th grade was using Larson Big Ideas. They both kind of wanted some more information. We brought them the groups back in to kind of do some more PD. The group who was piloting CM3P seemed to be struggling a little bit more. It's a little bit of kind of more of a whole class as opposed to small group. The other thing is Hadley has some different tracks in math. So we're using that program with our accelerated who go on in our gifted program, and then kids at the first to be at the 85th percentile, and they were really struggling with it. We did use an evaluation tool that they put out to see if it is Common Core aligned enough, and through the scoring process of that, Larson Big Ideas fared much better. And I kept that information in there. We've got the criteria. We did score it in that. But then I did highlight some of those other reasons as to why we really landed on the Larson Big Ideas. And I think what was important to me was the ability for small group instruction. And then also, as they started to kind of dabble with the math menu, and it's very new to them, they're able to use that as a core piece. And they've just started really exploring it as it is. What I do want you to know is that it is only an online subscription. And the reason for that is, and I was pretty upfront with Hadley and pushed back, even, you know, what about waiting another year, that sort of a thing, because I believe that one part assessment is released, all of the textbook companies will react again and change things. And if we went with paper version, we would be looking at outdated materials within a year. So the online version, and it's pretty typical, textbook companies do 6 years, licensing for 6 years, gives them all the updates in the moment. And that was important to me. It will push our teachers a little bit from an instructional perspective, but they've all been using the login to start getting familiar with it, and we will go ahead and give some more professional development.
Can I ask you a question? On the Hadley Math, in your report, Hadley Math teachers completing the assessment. Now, all the Hadley teachers, math teachers, went through this?
What we did is we asked them all to come and evaluate.
Did they all come?
And talk about it. Not all of them did, but we had every grade level represented. But Amy Irvin, the head of math specialist, met with the grade level teams to go back. And she had the teachers who actually piloted it kind of worked through it first and then brought that feedback back to them. So we, you know, there's about 3 per grade level, and at the meeting where we kind of went through the evaluation tool, I believe about 8 people, including and a special ed teacher who has used
it. Was it overwhelming? Was it a consensus?
Yeah, she went back and kind of asked them to, for lack of a better word, vote.
I'm a little more sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing how quickly you just got desensitized.
I was going to ask you the question, because in here you say Larson Big Ideas was unanimously selected by the math department.
And it was. And those were her words and circling back with the department. And right. I will tell you, with sixth grade, I kind of kept pushing because I wanted it to be CMP3. I mean, it's great problem solving, lots of language. And, I couldn't get them there, and I don't want to force something they're not comfortable with.
So this wasn't your first choice.
No.
This was their choice.
Right, it was their first choice. But
this is their choice.
It is their choice. And it makes total sense to me. Marquardt, which is much more at risk, has also using this, and they've already adopted it. And we contacted them, like, how are you using it successfully with your at-risk learners? Because that's who we were worried about. And what they said is, we're scaling back on what we get to. Well, I'm not comfortable with slowing it down because we have kids who kind of couldn't keep up with it. And so in the end, it makes total sense. We visited St. Charles District, not this year, the year before. They've already been using it, and that's where they kind of saw the first glimpse of it. So
I want to go back to not the tool, but the time. Do the teachers want to move forward on something new? Did the Hadley Math Committee think that moving forward on this next year, I'm assuming, right?
Correct.
In the light of no more new stuff?
Yes.
I get where you're coming from. So you feel like Hadley would adopt this without the reservations that we've heard in some of the...
great question. They've actually been, pleading, please, we want just a core resource. Mm-hmm. They, for years, have been kind of pulling things and kind of putting it together. And we've had a pretty successful, rigorous program. I don't want to lose that rigor.
More rigorous?
Well, what they saw
was... That was my next question,
because
obviously no one thinks...
At least hard enough.
Although I think in math, the perception, especially with that kind of accelerated track, it does push kids. So I think it will be rigorous enough, and the idea behind the differentiated small group instruction is to really push those kids who are ready.
I'm all for differentiation.
The last 2 years, Hadley did actually go back and look at data around their sixth graders for those that weren't accelerated year one to see who they could accelerate at the end of the year, and I think that was a great olive branch out to parents and kids who have worked hard and are being successful and want to continue to challenge
them. Well, this sounds like a good idea. Teachers want it.
Do we have enough staff to implement small group learning, what this is going to do?
Yes, because it would occur within the math block.
Do we need additional technology?
They'll have it. The technology is a key piece of this because the kids access their textbook online.
They can use their new Chromebook.
New Chromebook, and eighth graders can use the technology that's there. Now, you will see there is some workbooks, and I kind of push back on the workbook. The workbooks will only be for the kids who are not in that advanced track, and that was because they felt like that actual paper, they wanted to see how it worked with them, which is why you don't see us purchasing that's about 150 to 200 per grade level, and then we'll evaluate, could you get the kids to start using the Chromebooks and doing their homework? That would ultimately be our goal. I think they're going to be surprised as some of the kids are coming out of the elementary building with one-to-one technology that they'll all embrace it. So it may just be kind of a one-year cost, but that could potentially be for recurring.
Gotcha.
But Hadley will be here at the next board meeting, and they will can speak to their desire. And they're
that's
looking
good.
At an Algebra 1 textbook as well.
The Hadley teachers will be?
Hadley math teachers. Not everybody, but
a spokesperson.
Yeah.
Team.
Will be here. Well,
that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Thanks for doing that.
Why not everybody?
What?
Why not everybody?
They can't. I've met them before.
That's a good question.
Well, we invite people. I think it's just a matter of, kind of, a lot of them have families and...
Can I ask a question, general?
I will encourage them to attempt.
Mm-hmm. Just a general, what is the highest math in 8th grade for an accelerated person at Hadley?
Geometry. This does not include geometry because we use the high school's geometry book.
When do they do algebra?
7th grade.
So it goes algebra, if I'm in gifted, to geometry. Okay.
Right.
And then most of those kids go into trig then, next?
3-4. Algebra 3-4, actually.
Okay.
They're on a pretty intense path.
It's very intense.
I mean, they pretty much set in stone the path they're going down.
But then there are kids who are accelerated a year, and they'll finish algebra in 8th grade, and then they'll start, and they typically start honors geometry their freshman year.
Yeah.
We have a few kids who need to do algebra over again, but it's often, you know, kids who are newer to the country and haven't, you know, some of our second language.
So everybody will have algebra when they leave Hadley.
That would be our goal. We're not there yet.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, what was the textbook before?
Just an old Prentice Hall kind of,
It wasn't everyday math?
Yeah. Everyday math only goes till
just elementary.
So it just goes to grammar school?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is the one thing you will find is that a lot of the textbook companies are 6-12 or K-5, K-6 in the area of math. We haven't found very many that go.
So everyday math doesn't offer something.
No, okay. No, they don't. So it'll come to the board meeting for an actual presentation and discussion.
But this is a replacement cost, Bob? Is this what's going to happen? Workbook costs go down? CP or this goes up?
They haven't had anything.
So
from a budgeting perspective, are we adding $67,000?
No. This is currently within my 13-14 budget that I allocated for. It was one of those areas that I projected for. It's within this year's budget.
This year's budget she's spending.
So you're spending this year's budget for next year.
Correct. But she's been planning for this adoption cycle for a couple of years, knowing down the road that math
needed it.
Yeah, and that's what we do in education all the time. I mean, as I oversaw as a chief academic officer, we would always plan for large.
Because this is a change in textbooks.
Correct.
But this is not textbooks anymore.
But so you really have to plan for it. Everything's on a cycle.
Right. With coming, we always do literacy materials, and we also know there'll be some new science materials. Not as many, but some.
Thanks for that.
That was good. It's a good question because the textbooks can get a little goofy because you are buying them in this year's budget for next year, but you plan for it. Karen's probably been looking at this for 3 years.
The online thing is brilliant. it is brilliant and really thinking down the road to do the online thing.
Well, the advantage is when you purchase it now, because this is online, and the teachers, they were very generous with access, then they have access to the resources all summer to use for personal planning and that, which is why we always try to do it at the year.
Paul, do you think you could invite the math teachers?
They'll respond better to Karen. Let me just be really honest here.
You didn't do too bad.
Well,
we can speak
openly. Our intent is that one of the things that seems to be a theme is that there are certain teachers who feel like they're either left out or they don't get involved because it won't do any good. We want to make sure that people become public and say, I'm for this, or I'm against this, and not let them do it after the fact.
Fair.
There's got to be a new level of accountability, I think, if we're going to make progress.
I think conflict's a good way to resolution.
God knows you embrace that.
So, yes, he does. We love him for that.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
We kind of need to move on. We have a lot of...
So
Karen's up again, or
I
know. I'm saying, are you ready to move on?
Yes, I am. Okay.
We won't ask as many questions. You probably hit all the tough ones.
Well, no. Okay. So this, I'm not going to go through the background in that, but we know that engineering is a part of the new next generation standards, and we've deconstructed them. We've done some things around that, and the teachers elementary teachers and Hadley teachers will be implementing one new NGSS unit next year. However, at the elementary, K-5, we want to introduce them to the engineering practices. This is a resource that will introduce both the kids and the teachers. It is more scripted than we're used to or that we've used. But I feel like, given the teachers feeling overwhelmed with math this year, that it was important to find something that would get them teaching around engineering, which is really solving problems, that's connected to their new standards next year. And it's kind of a nice scripted, what I do on day one, day two. It comes with all of the materials. And so that's really what this is. And each grade level identified, mostly two, one resource. Kindergarten didn't have anything that met their needs. However, they have identified the pushes and pulls from another source. It's not over $10,000, which is why this is coming to you. The teachers who are on the science committee looked at the resources. We had them for 30 days. And I actually have a small group at Franklin that will be using them with their a PBL that they're doing in the next few weeks.
And that was your note here on level 3, the PBL?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they...
And that was within the budget that they had for PBLs then?
This was also part of my projected budget for this year.
For PBL.
We'll be looking at things. And on a side note, Ron Richardson met with them for free.
Don't be so
sad. That's part of the package.
He's actually coming back, and he's going to be their guest speaker to kind of kick it off. But they will be working on that area of land, kind of designing that. And Ron is hoping that the other three schools next fall will like to do something about designing their outdoor classroom space as part of a PBL.
That's getting the corporate America into your PBLs.
It is.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. And you'll be seeing a lot of that.
I won't bring that up tonight, but just for your benefit.
So who's the program?
Engineering is Elementary is the name of the program. And it was designed by...
National program, I guess?
I think Boston's Museum of Science and Industry. It's been around. Other districts have been doing engineering for a while. That's who referred us.
This is the program.
That's how we found that. But the kids are creating. So that'll come to the board meeting. I want to be sure. Dollars were designated. I want to be sure we're using them this year.
Maybe it's me, but...
Better you
maybe do. Just change the titles because I get to see somebody we're paying $5,000 for Play-Doh.
Well, but it is the kids I believe are making their Play-Doh. I mean, you have to kind of go back in. I mean, the teachers went through
we
the
get
materials.
It? Oh, no, we're not saying that. We get it. We're saying
you're better
you're
title.
Right here.
Yeah. So, as long as we're talking titles, the best
but
of
it
bugs.
Comes with all the stuff.
I read it, Bed Bugs. Right, I
know.
They're back.
The best of bugs. They're back. We're bringing them in ourselves. Anyway.
You good? What's your last one?
The Hadley Bookroom Resources. And Kayla, one of the literacy specialists, will be here tonight. And,
mm-hmm.
and this, you know, every year we add to the bookroom. And she's been planning with science and social studies teachers over the last couple of years. She joins them in their PLCs. And this is really to kind of fill a gap with our lower-level readers.
Yeah.
A lot of these kids do not have internet access at home, which mm-hmm. means the physical book is helpful. So
it's internet access at home. Now you hit my hot button.
So this is just to, you
the
know,
bookroom, though, the bookroom. I'm sorry, I get on this Hadley book thing and I have to ask bookroom. I have a library, which is...
You have a classroom library?
I have a classroom library, and now I have a bookroom.
The bookroom contain what we call text sets. So there's typically 6 copies of a book. And when you do small group instruction, you pull...
So it's a teacher's bookroom. They go in there
it's
and
correct. It's for teacher resources to complement what's happening with the curriculum.
So we don't need a letter for that one. Okay.
No.
And these have all been vetted.
These are get approved through Karen and a team.
And Karen will look through it all, and they're all very... They're informational texts. They're going to be pretty mild with
But it's a good question, though, because there are a lot of different libraries going on.
They're student books, right?
Some are connected to some are. Studies and some to science.
Yeah. Is this the room that we set up in Frank T's old room?
Yes.
So this
was actually
a
room. It's not like a virtual room.
No, this was Frank T is a teacher over at Henry. He used to be in the lower level basement, and now his lab has been moved up as part of the library. So what we did is we reconfigured that. I think we had three teachers working in there in partnership, and we set it up to work as a smaller
intervention space as well as the book room for the teachers.
And does it actually flood down there?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
It does, huh?
They're not on the floor.
I read that one, too.
It doesn't flood on the floor?
Well, no, the books.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't know the basement flooded.
No, we have a door on the east side of that building that goes down. I don't know why they put an 8-foot doorway right there. Probably it's an emergency access, but if you get excessive water, it'll come rushing right in those doors. And it happens almost every spring. It hasn't happened yet.
Keep our fingers crossed.
Okay.
All right.
Good with Karen's three.
I like all your
stuff. All right, wow.
Thank you.
You go away unscathed.
I
appreciate that.
Okay, are we ready to move
on? We're ready to move on.
All right, then the next order of business then this evening is the amended 2013-14 budget. As required by Illinois law, I am required to submit an amended budget when particular items in the budget exceed their budgeted amounts by 10% or greater. This year we had two such instances. That is, first of all, we had the borrowing where we brought in $7 million in revenue as a result of the capital projects borrowing. And then the other line item is the additional amount that we budgeted for professional fees associated with the elementary school additions.
Did we ever get that?
Now you know why I'm so sensitive to this bill.
Did we ever get the final rate from MB?
Yes, 4%.
Yeah, 4.02 or something like that. 4%. Yeah, yeah. We closed on it. We had the board meeting, and we closed on it probably that Wednesday.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever saw that.
No, we closed within 2 days after the board meeting.
Right.
So, I wanted you to understand why I'm bringing this to you. First of all, it's required of me. I think it's good for transparency purposes, and I think it's just a good practice for us to do it. We know something is out there. I don't want the auditors to come back and say, hey, Bob, did you know this or did you know that? I want to be able to plan accordingly. So.
And anybody on this board should know that these items were hitting the whole way through because when we approved the additions, both of these were going to hit.
They were going to hit. Yeah. I mean, there was no
one
way
about
it's cause and effect.
Right. So.
Right. We knew long ago that we knew in the fall we were moving forward with these at that time were the proposed additions, and that we were going to incur additional fees as a result of that. And we've seen that throughout the fall and now winter and early spring with the FGM contract and the FQC contract. So I've increased that amount by approximately $900,000. As a result, we had $150,000 surplus originally presented to the board when this budget was approved back in August of 2013, and now we're moving to a significantly greater surplus because of the borrowing program.
Right.
We borrowed $7 million. I'm increasing costs by $900,000. By the time it all works out, it provides for what I'm going to call a surplus of approximately $6 million. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, this thing's all...
So here's a recognition of your $7 million in borrowing. We went through, and I'll get into Skyward and how we're utilizing that tool as we move into the tentative budget for next year. But we've updated all of our salaries and benefits accordingly. And then, like I said, the big purchase services increased as a result of the construction project. And then also I wanted to make you aware that I've noticed some goings-on, if you will, in the transportation fund. And that is that we're spending significantly greater money for homeless transportation in the choice routes. I'm going to say that this year...
Homeless transportation what?
Homeless transportation and our choice routes.
Choice routes.
We're a choice where we have to provide parents.
Yep.
So I don't need to go into that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one route a day that goes over to Franklin, and that route, you know, I got to tell you, I think I've spent $55,000 on it so far, and I know I've spent $55,000 on homeless, and that's all I budgeted for those. And homeless is costing us well in excess of $55,000 a month with the cab services that we have.
How much scrutiny are, I mean, I asked this last year, or last fall. We have somebody monitoring that, right?
Yes, we do.
Have we ever kicked anybody, ever taken anybody to, and said we can't provide this because you're security of the system? Or
well, I'll tell you what we do is we review them annually, or the ladies upstairs review them throughout the year, and I know that they have already sort of put the kibosh on people. They've informed parents that you will not be allowed to register your children for the next school year because they can't prove residency or whatever that whatever the case may be.
So one of the pieces, I want Julie to speak on this because she oversees that homeless aspect or does a lot of work with it.
We are limited in what we're allowed to do in terms of investigating. You can't do any investigation until 18 months has passed. So you have to take people at their word that they're homeless. After that, you can ask them for verification, validation of where they're living. But homeless is really a mushy concept. So, you know, if they are saying that I'm living with relatives, but it's not what I prefer. It's not. I'm doing it because I have to.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're still homeless.
I think we have two families that are going all the way into Chicago every day.
But Bob, we can still do the same program, but can we turn it into, I don't know if we were supposed to talk about this, but can we turn it into a reimbursement program?
Well, we go out and we have. No.
They pay, they send us the receipts.
Who is they? The student?
The student and family pay. Why can't we do that?
We're required to provide transportation.
Well, we can do that, but they pay for it. They'll send us the invoice. We'll cut them a check.
I think most of these people, just as a fact of being homeless, they're not going to have the money to be able to pay for those services up front, if that's the question you're asking me.
I'd like to look at that.
We can look at it. My bet is that it's not allowed.
I read the statute, and I have to tell you, I didn't think about that when I read it, and I don't remember it saying that there was
one. You have to refund.
There have been times when we did make arrangements for a gas card.
We had a family coming in from one of the further western suburbs, and we gave this lady a gas card, and there were some goings on with it.
So let's go through the amended piece because that one's still going to impact the tentative budget as well.
Yeah, we get off track easier, but I'm with you on that because I just think at some point if it's 18 months, then we have to be diligent on that 18 month deadline, and somebody's homeless, I'm sensitive to it, but the fact of the matter is there's schools right across the street from where these people are living in the city, and economically it just doesn't make sense. At some point, the cost that we are bearing as a district, we can just put them up in an apartment complex with their parents in our neighborhood, save the transportation costs, and pay for their residence.
We're solutioning here. Well, I'm saying, when you give them 2 months, you say, hey, in July, here's 2 months worth of taxi fares. In August, you send your invoice, we'll send you the invoice. At least they're 2 months ahead. They're not stuck with cash. If they spend that cash, not my problem.
So there's a lot of legal pieces here that we've got to be real careful because we will end up paying a fine. Ended up paying more in the long run. So we'll do a little bit more checking. I appreciate where you guys are at. It's pretty cut and dry.
I've been in the Quad Cities.
But the thing about it is, I remember reading the same thing, that if there's a school that's across the street, I think they have the opportunity to go to that.
If they choose not to.
Yeah.
We have to provide.
But I thought the way it read was, and let's get off track. Was it the beginning of the year to the end of the year, and then after that, but that's not what we do.
They can continue. There's no limit on it. Mm-hmm. And there's a very subjective component to the definition of homelessness.
So,
and they have, once you're designated homeless or you're identified as homeless, you'll go into a whole different arena of rights. For example, you can live across the street from a school and be homeless, and you can still get transportation.
So for this, since Bob has brought it up as an outlier in the budget. Julie, can we have a finance facility topic conversation mm-hmm. on this?
Yeah, I just wrote it down that we'll have a homeless transportation conversation.
Yeah.
We'll kick it off next finance.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's only going to continue to go up.
Oh,
you're right, Joe.
Yeah. You're right.
And one of the things I wanted to comment, there are things happening with the property along Roosevelt Road, some apartments over there. If they ever shut that down, what happens with the X number of kids that we
will
have coming from there, and how does that affect homeless transportation? It could be staggered.
We have 120 kids out of that complex.
Yeah. You could be picking them up in cabs in different parts of the city.
Exactly. Okay. So, I brought that up to you within the past couple of weeks, that it is a major concern, and it is becoming a significant strain on the budget. It's $100,000 a year out of a budget that's only $1.3 million. So, to me, that's 10%, that's 8%.
So the biggest reason why you're doing an amended budget is because of construction cost. That we added $7 million into it, which went outside the 10% variance within a budget.
Correct. And these are, Mike, would you move on to the next spreadsheet? This is just the way that I present information to you. You'll see it. You'll see it in the amended budget. You'll see it in the tentative budget. So this is just a different way of looking at all the numbers.
I'm good with it.
Associated. Are we good with you?
Patrick, you good with it?
Okay, then Drew. I just wanted you to keep in mind now that I'll be bringing this to this discussion at the Board of Ed meeting on May 12th, where I'll be asking you for permission to go out and post. This has to follow the same budget process that we do for an ordinary budget, and that is we'll be taking it out. We have to post for public notice. We have it available in our buildings. We show it in the newspaper, and then we would move. It has to be posted for 30 days. And we would move to amend this budget at the June 23rd meeting, and I will need to prepare those state documents to submit prior to June 30th.
For us guys on the board who are rookies, just keep in mind, we might have set a rookie record. That's 32,558% over budget.
Yeah.
That may have never happened before with a rookie team. So
we got three of the rookies voted for.
Yeah. All three rookies did 32,558% over budget.
And I know you're going to go into the overall budget. We really need to do this, but I'm just going to, while you pass your things out or whatever, my aside, you send this to read this, and I'm sorry I'm going off agenda. This is the
credit cards.
I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it every meeting. I did a little highlight, and I'm going to give you this so you can have it. It's our facilities people, and I'm a Glen Ellyn resident. I'm here for the stakeholders. They're going to Wheaton. They're going to Carroll Springs. Stream. I always say that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then yet you have other people who will go to Lens Hardware in Glen Ellyn instead of going. And I'm not against either hardware store. It's just that our constituents, our stakeholders, are Glen Ellyn people. It's tax dollars add up. And I'm just going to continue to point it out.
Correct.
Has anybody, have you gone to these people and asked what I have requested?
I would spend local.
Spend local.
I will tell you that I'll have a meeting with my guys tomorrow morning or very soon. When I say very soon, is I'm not in the office tomorrow, and I will encourage them to make sure that they
only if it's economical. I mean,
to me,
the one guy went to Napa Auto Parts in Villa Park. What?
I was just mentioning we do have portions of
I'm talking about my stakeholders here. I understand that. But percentage wise, you have to spend within. I understand we have students, and if we have 5%,
she's saying that.
No,
so
in our district,
commercial
is 5%, but are these the places in our district? I don't think they are, from what I can tell. And it's hard to tell, but knowing where I think they are. I know that, I can't say the hardware store in downtown Wheaton is not in our district.
I know.
So the message is spend locally.
And that's what I keep saying, so I just highlighted it this time so you could have
it. I appreciate it.
Because I will say, one or two people do it.
Yeah.
And the other four don't.
Okay. All right.
I'll be looking every month.
Okay, so we are on.
You're consistent, if nothing.
Way too consistent.
So we are moving on then to this evening, the tentative 14-15 budget. I wanted to walk you through sort of the steps that we go through. This isn't something that just happened over a short period of time. We started talking about this year's budget really last fall. We start talking about capital projects. Mike brings his tech plan. A lot of other different components of that conversation have taken place over a number of months. So what you're seeing now here is really a first blush in terms of what the budget's going to look like. This budget will be is presented to you this evening for a conversation. We'll be bringing it back to this committee in a couple of weeks so you can have more discussion on it. The plan is to bring it, let's see here, we want to bring it 27. In May to you again for a presentation to the board for allowing us to post. We'll post in June. We'll bring it back to you again in June at the board level to have another conversation. Then we go away and we do our work over the summer, and I will bring it back to you either at the first or second meeting in August for approval. We are required to have that budget approved by the last day of the first quarter of the fiscal year. So by September 30th, we're already a quarter into the year, we are required to pass a budget. So we have time, but I do want you to know that there are certain requirements that I have to abide by in terms of when certain documents have to be presented and filed with the appropriate agencies. So we've taken a little bit different approach in terms of how we developed this budget this year. It was truly a team effort. A lot of time in cabinet. Matter of fact, I know that this was more cabinet time than what we've done previously. That was at Paul's direction. So I think you want to now.
Yeah, I'll take it from here for a few seconds. So one of the big pieces that I think the board needs to be looking at is that big perspective, and you guys have talked about it on a few occasions, how do all these pieces fit to the whole. But it's also important to, and I think about this from a principal lens, I could always tell really what a principal's vision and mission were way beyond the words that they had on the statements. Where I would go to look what they truly valued was their master schedule. For me, their master schedule told me, what did they value from a big picture, from a school-wide perspective? Do you value planning time? Do you value electives? How much time do you value for different aspects? I see this budget as something very similar to the board, and the board helping us to really set that piece. For me, this budget reflects our vision, our mission, and our values of the district. And for me, why this does look different than what you may have seen in the past is I believe you have to start with a vision, mission of a district. Why do we do what we do? Why are we operating on a daily basis? Because I look, and you said it earlier tonight, Joe, I don't want to be asking you every question on a bill. That's not my role. Your roles are to really set those big criteria for us so you can help. So we have your thoughts in our head as we're going through this budget. What are those big criteria? For me, the vision, the mission, the values of our district are huge. On that next page is that the board policy and the AP policies around, and we look at these pieces, especially the number 1 through 4. 1, the budget shall provide for continued delivery of high-quality educational programs aligned with the long-range priorities. For us, the long-range priorities are critical. You have to have those pieces in front of you as you're going through these budgets to say, what are you valuing? Well, we're putting a lot of our work and our effort into staff. Do those pay off? The budget shall provide for educating students in a safe and secure facilities, which are maintained and updated to the best serve the learning needs of students. 3, the district shall maintain staffing patterns that align with class size targets that we set just a month or so ago. And then this is an important one, the unreserved fund balance. And what do we do with it once it's below that 25%? And we're right in there. We're between those ranges that the policy sets for us. So these are pieces that I think it's critical for a board to operate from. Because what's easy for a board to do is go in and nitpick all the little pieces within a budget if we don't see the big picture of where we're going. Because at the end of the day, you're not working alongside us on a daily basis, but you set that vision for us to say, what are those pillars we should be guiding ourselves against? And for us, in this budget, these pillars guided where we're heading and what we're doing, along with the vision, the mission, and the beliefs of our district. That's how I set that priority for the budget. And Bob's right. We spent a lot of time. I think it was very different for the team this year, because my belief is that we all have to see the budget. We all have to rip apart the budget. We all have to understand the budget. I want anyone on my cabinet, any one of you could be asking them questions about the budget and how it connects to the bigger picture around students, around staffing.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I'll tell you, embedded in what you said, you know, woven is where you spend your money is your priorities. That's what you think is important.
And I believe that. And yeah, that's why I connect it as a principal to a master schedule. Because
right,
master schedule ultimately is about budget. Because I have to tell my assistant superintendent or whomever was overseeing that to say, I value this type of teachers, this amount of teachers, and we know human resources are going to cost me more than anything else.
Right.
So they were able to see my master schedule, but it also aligned to my budget.
Even when you change your budget from one year to the next, and you have that in here, and you see the changes, now you're making decisions. Hey, these are our priorities. We
exactly
have a shift in priorities. And so I think that's important. I think when you look at this budget overall, you see facilities became important.
It did.
Which I think is important for our board.
And you see that as number two guiding
right
principles.
Right.
For us, we have these in front of us. We have our learner, you know, the long-range plan in front of us. We have the mission vision kind of embedded in who we are.
Not to get too philosophical.
No, that's really what tonight is about, because it's not enough time for you guys to get into the nuts and details. But to say, from a philosophical standpoint, are we there?
And what I like to hear is that your cabinet knows, that Karen knows what all her budget items are, because suddenly then you put dollars to what you're requesting or where my changes are. And
absolutely.
Then you now understand priorities. You know, you can't go back and say, well, if I only had this, well, hey, this is what I get to work with then. I can have it if I want it. You can have your
PBL coaches
if you want it.
Joe, that's it. And that's exactly how we did this. We went through, we looked at our budgets and said, a priority for us, and it's been a priority for the district for 2 years, is this problem-based learning. But it's not getting any traction. It's not going anywhere. So what do we have to do from a priority standpoint to move this forward? And Karen had to look at her, because it falls under her department for the most part. And I had to look at mine and say, what can I cut? And I can come to you tonight and say, this was a priority, because it's been the priority of the board and the communities and our teachers to get PBLs off the ground. But without additional support, it will never happen. So we had to look at the overall and say, hey, I need 200 and whatever X dollars. Karen, Paul, we're going to take that from you. And I can show you that my priority within this budget. So that's a great example of how, again, you don't have to do it this way, but this is how I believe budgets should be crafted and how boards should talk about budgets, are from that large standpoint. Could you get into each little discretionary, but you absolutely could, but we'll be here for the next 7 years.
But that's the finance committee can go through some of that.
And I do have some questions.
And that's good,
because
we gave you the whole piece. And I'm trying to share. We're not trying to hide anything from you. We put everything in this document for you to look at.
So, Paul, with those priorities that you're talking about, how did Karen come up with, I mean, $200,000 for this year's budget for PBL?
So we really sit and talk about, where are we going, again, here? What's the long-range plan? And we have to start evaluating what's working, what's not. How long are you going to let just PBL sit there? If that's where we're going, STEM education or STEAM education, problem-based learning, you can let it sit there, but sooner or later you've got to go back and say, these are transformative actions around 21st century learning. How are we going to move this forward? If we believe in this document, how are we moving these pieces forward? And we have to reflect on our own practices and say, what's working, what's not? And we had to say, PBLs are kind of, they're all over the place. Is that really what we want? STEM education, kind of all over right now. We need a centralized theme. How do we move this forward? So we had hard conversations with cabinet, with principals, and then with teachers now, saying, is this what you would value? that Colorado trip, I know Mr. Cooper disagrees with it, but it was important for teachers to go out and say, there is value behind a PBL coach. I have to have a PBL coach. If you want this done this way, I have to have this time of support. So we had to have data from multiple sources to say, this is it. Did her and I believe it was important? Yeah. But as we've seen, if only Karen and I like something, that doesn't mean the rest of the district is going to get behind it.
But yeah, you got to the conversation and the topic, but how did you say, now I need $500,000?
So I got to the $200,000 based off of what our average teacher salary is, because it looked, I don't want a brand new teacher doing this. I think I've got to have somebody who's a veteran teacher, who's been there, done that, and has credibility amongst his or her colleagues. So we knew the average cost for a teacher is roughly $100,000. So I knew I needed somewhere in the $230,000 range, and that's what we set aside for this initiative.
You said, like we talked about, we said, pointed out, human resources is always the most expensive. So you go, okay, human resources plus 10% for technology plus 5% for online books plus 3% of general. And you come up with a number, or do you just say, human resources, $100,000, times it times two, and I come up with a estimated budget?
So we looked at the estimated budget of the cost of the person, but then we also had to look at our budgets. Because I really do have board members in my head when we're having these conversations. I knew I couldn't just add to the budget. So I knew I had to come back to Karen and say, what is it what we're willing to cut? And where should this cut most impact? And we really felt like in professional development, within her budget of professional development, because really that's what these coaches are going to be doing, is professional development. So we don't see it so much as a cut there.
It's a reallocation?
It is that's the exact word. It's a reallocation, because would those funds have done us as much good sending people places so I can hear from some and others, or would it make more sense to hire somebody who's working right alongside teachers to implement something? So that was the other part of the conversation we had to have, was, yeah, I know it's going to cost X dollars for salary and benefits. Other than that, they're not going to need much other support, maybe some more support from Karen and myself, but there should be no other real expenses associated with them. So then we had to go to, okay, if we want this, and I've got Patrick in my head, I've got to be able to look at Patrick across the table and say, this is the value cut we made. Because do we believe in professional development? Absolutely. But I knew I couldn't come to you and say, hey, I know the budget's $52 million, but we're going to go to $52.25 for next year just because Paul wants these pieces.
Are these coaches, do you envision, or I guess you do, your plan for them is to be coaching the teachers?
Absolutely.
And are they going to be in the PBL with the students? So they're also going to have another,
They'll bring them to panel, and it's something that we'll bring to you guys in 2 weeks, 4 weeks. We'll show you what panel is. Literally, we're industry partners, but their role is to work with teachers, plan units with teachers, and that's going to be very challenging.
But they will be in the classroom too during the
There will be during the panel. They will be right there during the panel. They'll also be connecting with industry partners. I know you said that, but that's a huge piece of what we're doing. We're thinking, we know business partners are important to us, industry partners,
sure,
from universities, from your fields of work. They have to be here with us, because we're going to be solving the problems of those industries. I want to work with authentic problems for our kids. Yeah, it can be from a kinder all the way through. But that's that same philosophy, even though we're just talking about two very small pieces of the budget. That's a big view of where we're going with our district around STEAM education. Problem-based learning is our instructional model that we're bringing forward. So if I believe in that much, Cabinet believes in that much, we've got to prioritize a budget that says, Board, this is where we're going. This is where you told us you wanted to go. We're going to get there, and we're going to get there sooner rather than later. And we have teachers on board with us.
And
expense neutral.
I'm still on my conversation topic here. I still don't understand. Let me ask it a different way.
Okay.
How's my budget supporting the other
Okay, I see.
I'm with you. That's yeah.
Absolutely. So we look at them all, and Mike can be the first to attest. No one's left unscathed in a budget conversation with us. We sit and we have hard conversations about, so what about technology? So what? I get you're asking for X amount of dollars. For this conversation, I'll say $2 million. I get that, but why? Why is this going to be a game changer for my students, and why can't I just have... And Mike, you can be my witness. How many times, or you can speak for yourself, did I come to you and say, can I have some of your money? I need some of that money.
But no, your coaches won't have any of his money. They don't have technology.
They will.
So some of it's embedded. And that's where
they are.
That's when I start reviewing this budget. I start getting a little confused because I'm thinking about those things. And then I have like the network IT services budget, the $2.2 million that we've increased this year by $345,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge increase. I marked ones. I highlighted the huge increases. And to me, we can go through and spend a lot of time and
yeah.
go into the minutia, the weeds.
The
but
weeds.
To me, when you have that big of a change, $345,000, and it's $1.8 million, but that's one-sixth of what you were before.
Well, I just want to point out, though, too, Mike assumed responsibility for the copiers this year, which are over $120,000.
Right, which, and I remember that in our discussion, so I'm like, is the copiers a big thing? And I'm like, I can pull all that data out and see how much it is, but I'm just going to ask the question.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
But what I really want is the network IT service budget. I want to see, you have $2.2 million, well, then you must have a budget on your screen that's for you. And you must have line items that you want to fill that 2.2. And that's what we're going to see.
You will have that next.
Yeah, good.
You'll have that. You'll
I'm struggling
have,
with that one.
Remember, this first piece is that big budget overview.
Okay.
Because we knew you would want to get into the weeds right away, but we were like, okay, how do we keep them at the high level first
right.
before
well,
you dive
I'm
into every... Yeah, I know. And believe me, I'm working my tail off here to keep you guys
take,
up here.
Take away the
parachute. Can I make a comment here? We have less than 20 minutes,
yeah.
and I'm not even on my second or third screen.
But that's okay.
But we read all this, too. So,
I mean,
I'm not asking you to go through what we read over the weekend. But I am saying that what I'll do then is give you the four big budgets that I want to see.
We're going to give you all department budgets.
All right.
You'll see all right. department budgets. Those are all done. But honestly, it was about trying
what
to keep you...
What is the Board of Ed Services budget then at $607,000?
That is auditor services, legal services, insurance that's paid, you know...
So we don't screw up?
The
yeah.
fiduciary...
But you don't get to spend any of that.
I
just spent it for you.
I double that.
I know. The insurance alone is almost $400,000.
I have a question about, you know, especially for us guys. So I spent the first 17 years of my career doing budgets and reviewing budgets. And one of the things that really helps is if we're going to get a budget this year would be to show us the same line item last year.
We have it.
And then, but then, if there's a difference that's whatever we decide
yep.
is going to be material, to go ahead and explain the difference. Because if you explain the difference,
which
we may not have any questions at all.
Which
see,
is...
See, line them up, decide what the differences are, and then go into depth on explaining the difference.
Page 12, page 12 and 13, they've done that.
On the line items?
On the line
yeah.
items.
Yep.
But by broad line items.
So
and there's six major changes that I had questions on. There's more than that.
So let Bob explain, because this is a piece that, quite honestly, for me was new too, because I was used to having budgets aligned to all their fund balances. So that's a little bit different here in Illinois. So it took me some time as well to say, Bob, why can't I just have a budget like this only? So we do talk about what the state requires you to have as funds.
Well, then we want to go on.
You just want to skip around here because we've destroyed the presentation. Welcome to Finance Committee.
So in the state of Illinois, I'm required to report items according to... I have to account for revenue and expenditures by fund. You have your funds. You have your Ed Fund, O&M, Transportation, Municipal Retirement, Capital Projects, Life Safety, Debt Service, and Working Cash. I have to account for revenues and expenditures in those specific funds. Additionally, I have to take it a step beyond that, and I have to account for salaries, benefits, purchase services, supplies, materials, so forth and so on. So it's a two different ways of looking at things. First of all, I have to go by fund, and then I have to allocate it into what type of expenditure is it, a salary, a benefit,
sure,
or whatever.
So for this budget, why we wanted to keep away from the department right now, because all of those, minus maybe one or two, could go into any one department budget. So they don't line up beautifully by saying, oh, this all fits under the Ed Fund. There's probably not one budget out there that all directly goes to one of Bob's funds.
Yeah,
so you have
budget might hit a few funds.
Let me give you an example.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We budgeted $75,000 for unemployment compensation out of Board of Ed Services. Okay, that's part of your $600,000+. Lori manages that. So, or, you know, I do certain things. I manage certain expenditures out of the Board of Ed Services also. I manage auditor services. I manage the insurance and one or two other items. So for us to sit down and say, okay, here's Bob's FFO budget, I cross many different functions and many different objects. So it's difficult to give you an analysis of everything that I touch because it goes across many different expenses.
And we have that. I want to reiterate.
But you can turn it at 90 degrees, right, and say my FFO activities hit these budgets and this is the number.
And we had that, but we thought it was for this one. We wanted to stay high level before
we get the...
Yeah, you guys just went right to weeds. We were thinking there was going to be about 15 minutes of grace period.
Well, I mean, we understand the high level. We've been through the high level one.
I know, but you, for me, it's really important that we're making decisions off of this, off of these two pages that are supposed to guide you.
I agree.
That's why I keep pushing back here.
Well, I appreciate
as long
your
as
explanation.
Yeah. Okay,
because
good.
I went once beyond that. I mean, this is... At the end of the day, when you see changes of $6 million because of facilities, you know, I read some of the parents' comments and, you know, portables.
Yeah, wasn't that surprising?
You know,
yeah,
it was a lot.
That was interesting.
Right off the bat. And I didn't. So to me, we're making a statement in our budget, and that was your whole point.
Yep.
This is these are our priorities, and I appreciate the coaches that you're.
So, talking about making that a point. To help us for next week, because I'm with it already being 7:15. We're going to bring you department budgets. What else would you like to see for next or in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That would help you because we're already in the weeds, so let me just help you get there.
So you don't have to take notes. I'll put some of my stuff in an email.
Okay.
But I definitely want... I was sitting at one of the walking tours and I heard some discussion about salary. So you had put this salary benefits by department. You know, to me, what are our comparable schools doing? You know, it says direct instruction, 70%. If I, you know, is direct instruction at 60% for our comparables? Is it at 80? To me, I want to know what our comparables are saying there.
Okay.
I will put that.
That sounds good. Patrick, anything beyond?
Yeah, my thing is, and I want to make sure that we're clear on what we're looking for. Some of this stuff is duplicative, too, and it's supposed to be.
It's a different way of looking at the same information, and that information is, as you see it here, is how I'm required to file with the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, maybe purchase services hits six or seven of these 25,
10, 20. It hits every account in the district.
Turn it 90 degrees and show me purchase services for 2014-15 is $8 million.
We have it.
That's okay.
It's already done.
So we can say, okay, this is good, and we need to see it.
And that's what you're giving us next week.
That is, yeah. I mean, it is literally done. It's waiting for you, but we made a decision not to.
When I see the network IT server, I'm going to see what Mike
you're
going to
see Mike's budget.
I'm going to see
what you would see in Mike's budget would be how much goes to salaries, benefits, purchase services, supplies.
But are the purchase supplies and materials going to tell me what he's buying? Or does he have an open checkbook in the sense that we approve $800,000 for equipment, and then he goes and figures out what equipment during the year?
No,
you already know where we're going.
Yes.
Am I seeing that detail?
You will.
Okay, because I do want to see it. $2.2 million, Mike, is a huge budget for IT. It's grown a lot. We took over the copiers, but that's 120 of a 3-something. That's a big budget for us. It's easy to go after the big budget items, and that's the one
we have
to digest a lot. And we had a lot of comments about technology all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you read the comments, Mike, but I think you should, because you get teacher feedback about your technology. And if you haven't read it, and you, If you don't have the time, make the time would be my recommendation. The parents, they started talking about it, but it's clear. And in my group in finance at the tour, what you're doing was really good with the roundtable people that we had. So, you know, but the comments from the teachers, not so. So you need to get to that detail, at least get some sense of it as you're the technology.
Yeah, but all those pieces are pre-approved. It's not an open budget. It's not an open checkbook.
Because it's important to know. Go ahead. I got more.
So yeah, I do too. And maybe it doesn't have to be for the following meeting, but and maybe, you know, you need volunteers and I'll help do it. But I'd like to see, we have 13, 14, and now we have 14, 15. Is there a way that we can model the levy discussion to say, all right, we're going to have a levy discussion in the winter of next year.
In October, November, December.
Yeah. All right. Here's 13, 14. Here's 14, 15. This is how I see it. This is how the levy's rolling out. This is what my run rate was. So we come up with something, and we need $1.2 million to do something. We need $50,000 to do something. We put it in the model. The levy goes up. The levy goes down. Is that possible?
Well, what you're going to see in September, and Paul and I have already begun to talk about this, is we heard the board's conversation around trying to make or being asked to make decisions in bits and pieces and not seeing that big budget. So our thoughts are this summer and certainly in September, I would be willing to commit to the board that what you're going to see in September will be the following year's budget. So you'll have already approved the 14-15. This spring, this summer, fall, we'll start on the 15-16 budget, which will feed into the levy conversation that we'll start to have in October, November. Yeah,
That's the only way you can do it. That's
great, but I would only advise you just be careful. You don't want to get so bogged in the wheels because you're going to do this in July anyway. So it might be simple, okay, let's just add 2%, 3% on something like that, and then you're going to model it. And so people will start seeing the levies, all right, the teacher's salary, we know it's going to go up 4%. Mm-hmm. We know that one. The other ancillary ones, we're going to put a small stake in the ground that says 50 bips, we're going to go up in supply services, you know, 1% on something else.
We can definitely do that.
I mean, that's in essence what he did last time, though, isn't it? And then he has the guests on new construction and everything else.
And
EAV. Because the whole conversation comes around EAV.
Yeah. It's almost to me is, because I've seen them before, the sliding scales. There's that's maybe I'll try to create one.
Okay.
A sliding scale that you can see, like when you buy a car. I want this kind of car with this many miles.
At this interest rate.
AutoTrader.com.
At the end of the day, on the revenue side, as long as you tell yourself you don't want the expenses to go up, then people are going to pay less on their tax bill. He still may have to ask for an increase because EAV adjustments.
Right.
So, you know, when we get in that EAV discussion or the tax discussion, the levy discussion, it's to me, it's really whatever you're spending because that's what you're pegging your number to.
Well, yeah.
Because it's nothing about the revenues because you don't control the EAV. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask for more. And then that gets a little into what John's saying. That's what the confusion was in that discussion. Is really you just say, I don't want more expenses. We'll hold expense neutral. If as a board, Patrick, and want to be stewards and all that, well, that's what we should try to do is hold it neutral outside the increases of the salary because that's already contractual. Anything outside contractual, let's hold it. Even though CPI says we should go up, but let's stay strong and tighten the belt that way.
Okay.
That's my view on that. One thing I'd like to highlight, though, is your financial stewardship page. This page is a great communication page. This has to be not on page 6. This needs to be something we're waving everywhere because this, to me, says, you know, what we went out, what we did, how we were
fiscally
conservative and said, hey, you know, we're going to go out and tighten the budget. And people don't know this.
They don't.
And it's buried on paper.
Well, they forget it. They hear it, and they forget it.
You know what? If they hear it once, they're going to forget it. I mean, I hear things once and forget it.
So will you guys then shoot Bob an email or two on those next pieces? Because I can't believe it's already 7:22.
Well, I'm going to point out page 6 again.
Okay, no, that's good.
Can we spend 3 minutes doing
3 minutes, because I may have to add more seats.
We have more time to talk about this, or we're talking
you want to talk about something else? Or what do you guys want to talk about?
Right out here.
Or nothing.
Yeah. I'm worried that I'm going to pack the house again.
Go ahead.
Bob, I think one of the things that we talked about a couple of meetings ago and this meeting, and I know we're getting in the weeds, and I know that, but it helps me, but mm-hmm. when we do talk about technology lease renewals or copier space renewals and there's a savings, I don't know how hard it would be, but could it be interactive? It's going to hit this line item. This is what it is. This is the savings and the budget is going to be. Is that possible, you think?
You know, I think probably the best thing to do is for Paul and I to talk about what you're asking.
Okay.
Because,
Okay.
I'm not fully understanding. So yeah. I can do...
I think I know what you're saying.
Kind of what we were talking about before. It's and I'll try it. We need to talk about it because when Mike presented and said, hey, these are the savings I'm getting because we're going to Chromebooks with McAfee and all that, there, when we think about budgets, the way I would present that is really not with all the options I had, but with this, here's the savings I have. Here's my cost, what it was last year. This is what it would be if I do it this way. And this is the savings I've generated because I got creative and said, go Chromebooks.
Yes.
So that's kind of what we want to see is those numbers. You guys, it's, narrative's great, but for us guys, you show me you save $400,000 somewhere, that's the value, $40,000. The one other thing is last year we had made a commitment for, and I think you guys said yes to this, but I want to see it in the budget when we approved the additional assistant principal, that we were going to do that neutral.
Yep.
I know it's embedded in here, and it is neutral for all those listening, but I want to know where it is.
Okay.
How is it neutralized?
How is it neutralized? I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, let's take a quick break. And.